So they were going to take a look at the idea that ideology and doctrine are evil. Doctrine and ideology are quite widely considered to be evil by a lot of people, and of course most so by free thinkers and philosophers worth their salt, because what is the biggest enemy of free thought, logic and reason, if not ideology and doctrine? And first, let's define the terms here. So doctrine is just enforced ideology. Ideology is when the relationship between cause and effect is imaginary. So what does that mean? And I like this definition partly because it leaves room for a big misunderstanding, which I always love, because it gives me the opportunity to think and talk about it. So it's akin to liking a flawed gem. And the way this definition can be misunderstood is by thinking about it in terms of an invalid cause and effect link, which is not the same as the relationship between the cause and effect. If you take the definition to mean that event A, which is the cause, does not make event B happen, which is the effect, then that's the wrong interpretation of the definition. If we call it cause and effect, we're already admitting that A causes B. That's not in discussion. So when I say an imaginary relationship between the cause and the effect, it's not the fact that I'm imagining that sound appears when I ring the bell. No, that actually happens. The imaginary part is the explanation for why that happens. So a slightly better version of the definition, I think, would be that ideology is an imaginary explanation as to why a cause provokes an effect. The why is the essential part here. And of course, we can all think of ideologies that were bad across history, were evil. We can think of communism and Nazism as being evil ideologies, and of course they are. Let me just give you my take on this question, or my answer to the question, is ideology and doctrine evil? And I'm going to say no, because they can't be, because it's the same as calling a spoon evil, or herbal tea evil, or a knife evil. What's the common thread between all of those? They're all tools. A tool can be evil or virtuous. A tool is a tool. How you use it, that's another matter. You can use a tool such as a knife to prepare a very nice dinner for a loved one, or to threaten somebody and thus steal their property. One is good, the other is evil. It's not the tool's fault if a better tool appears that can do a particular job better. It's not the pickaxe's fault that we now have bulldozers and excavators. It's not the hammer's fault that we have a jackhammer. So the tool has no blame here. It's quite obvious for everyone how a tool like an ideology can be misused, and we'll touch on that later just to make it extra clear. But let's look at the less obvious point of how can an ideology be used for good? How is doctrine something good? What value does it have? How can it be used for good? But what's the equivalent of cooking dinner with a knife? What's the equivalent for that, for ideology? Just take a practical example. It makes things much easier. Think of a prehistoric tribe, primitive tribe, living in the area where there's also an active volcano. Now, when they noticed the volcano and they experienced the first volcanic eruption, and some tribe members die and some of the village gets burned and by lava, they realize they have a problem. There's a danger that they have to contend with, and they have three options in response to the presence of the volcano. They can move further away from the volcano, they can move closer to the volcano, or they can stay where they are. And of course, moving closer to a perceived danger, I mean, that's pretty suicidal, so they're not going to do that. They probably move away from a danger, because it's very clear to the tribe members who observed the eruption that it's a bad idea to go near that mountain. Okay, got it. But what about those who haven't witnessed volcanic eruption? What about their children? Because a volcano can lie dormant, or it can just emit some smoke every now and then for like one or two generations even, and not do anything else. That's obviously dangerous. So how do you convince others who haven't seen the eruption to stay away from the volcano? Ta-da! That's where you use a doctrine. You enforce an ideology in your tribe, and the idea is bad mountain, home fire god. Ooh. What fire god? Fire god danger. Fire god burn you if you get close, and fire god is upset. You know, make home near fire god home, because home burned down, you die. Simple and effective. You do not mess with the fire god. Stay away from the mountain, because the mountain is the home of the fire god. Okay, you got it. Good. There's no need for anything else. If the result is that the tribe stays away from the mountain, from the volcano, job done. Like, they're doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be afraid of the fire god, because the fire god isn't real. It's just, you know, plate tectonics and, you know, the earth's mantle that is liquid, and that, who cares? The result is the same, and it's being implemented, it's being achieved even without any scientific understanding, which they are completely incapable of. The same result is being achieved. Stay away from the volcano. Even without any empirical evidence, because like their children will not have witnessed any volcanic eruption in their lives, but they will still stay away from the volcano. So it has a huge evolutionary advantage. It also has a huge psychological advantage, which is also an evolutionary advantage, because any advantage is an evolutionary advantage. Anything that increases your chances of survival, that is an evolutionary advantage. And in our case, let's imagine a more complicated, more restrictive scenario where the tribe lives on an island, a volcanic island. Now, they can't move away. They can't move away from the volcano. They have to keep living next to it. And the ideology can be used to decrease the anxiety of living next to a volcano. Think about it like this. Anxiety, fear, is something that sounds an alarm in your head against future problems. Just like an alarm in the cockpit of an airplane that says, pull up, pull up, pull up, to the pilot, because the plane's crashing. It's falling towards the ground. In the beginning, the alarm is very useful because it lets the pilot know what's happening. Once the pilot realizes that the engines are on fire and there's no way of saving them, and we are going to go down, and it's just a matter of where we go down and how we do it in the safest manner possible and save as much of the plane and the cargo and the people, the passengers, as possible, then that alarm that keeps repeating pull up, pull up, pull up, is not useful anymore. It's just noise and annoyance and anxiety provoking, so the pilot turns it off. if you watched any movies about air disasters, you know that pilots can turn alarms off. And that's precisely because of this. Otherwise, there would be at some point, like halfway through the movie, there would be this cacophony of noise, the equivalent of a panic attack. That's not useful to anybody. If you turn into a, you know, quivering neurotic mass huddling in a corner, beset by the horrible understanding of how much the universe is trying to kill you at any one point, that's not very conducive to survival, right? So what the tribe does, what the problem that the tribe needs to solve at that point is, it changes from lava is the problem, the volcanic eruptions are the problem, to the anxiety is the problem. We can't do anything to change the fact that we're living on a volcano. What we can do is turn that alarm off. How do we do that? Well, just use the best reasoning we have available, and which of course goes something like, why fire come to village? Fire God sent fire. Ooh, fire God angry. How to stop fire? Make fire God happy. How make fire God happy? Well, pretty girl make me happy. Maybe pretty girl make fire God happy. Pretty sure pretty girl makes fire God happy. Well, go throw pretty girl in big hole atop of fire God home. Yep. Problem solved. So in this case, this is how you get to human sacrifice. And the sacrifice is the price that a tribe pays to relieve their anxieties. So of course, all of this can go very, very wrong. And this is a primitive tool, like we mentioned, and it's far from perfect. So let's look at a few of the things that can go wrong with ideology. You have the illusion of an explanation instead of an actual explanation. Because doctrines and ideologies, they often package what are complex and inaccessible phenomenons like the plate tectonics into simplified narratives. That's basically what they are. This provides an explanation that bypasses the need for any empirical investigation. But the problem is that it may lead to misguided actions. For example, a tribe that lives next to the volcano but is not on an island, they could leave. Of course, that would be inconvenient, and maybe they would have to go through enemy territory to find another location, and who knows what. So maybe they decide that it's a better strategy to just do the human sacrifice instead. Right? So appeasing the god is better than actually taking the obviously better choice long term of leaving. So there's always that temptation there, because ideologies are a double-edged sword, and this is the other edge. The moment you provide an explanation, an illusionary explanation, that's the moment where you stop looking for the real explanation. And in some cases, the real explanation might just be completely out of your reach. Like, there's no way that a primitive tribe within their lifetimes or their children's lifetimes will discover plate tectonics. Okay, there's no way that happens. But they will discover it in a few tens of thousands of years, and they won't if they keep believing the story about the fire god. At some point, they will have to stop and disembark from this illusion and then start looking for the real answer, which long-term is the better thing to do. But short-term, like, why would an individual do that? Why would someone dedicate their life to advancing the knowledge about nature, since they won't be getting any actual result from it in the foreseeable future. That is another kind of human sacrifice. Instead of throwing the pretty young lady in the volcano, you're throwing your entire life into pursuing this obscure goal of understanding why the volcano's really erupting. And one could argue that, of course, the first sacrifice is the smaller. That's certainly what they did. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it moral. But it's easier. And guess what? If it's easier, usually people take it. Animals certainly take the easy way out. It's the humans who have developed the capacity of looking into the future, looking across time, and deciding against what's easier in the moment. But this is definitely a topic for another day. So another shortcoming of ideology and doctrine is that it's open to misuse and abuse. Because you can enforce social norms, such as don't live next to the volcano, by invoking fear or reverence of some unprovable concepts like the fire god. And like the sacred mountain narratives, it serves not only as a survival mechanism for the tribe, but also as a form of social control, of consolidating authority in the leaders of the tribe who can claim knowledge. And, you know, this is how the priest class is born. Because what are the priests? They're the ones who can talk to the fire god. And all of a sudden, you get the tribal leaders and the priests who will abuse this power. If you rely on imaginary relationships, this makes societies vulnerable to exploitation and error. If the connection between the cause and the effect is imaginary, you can definitely see how this can lead to harmful consequences when some of the imagined mechanisms fail to predict or explain a new phenomena. When the priests make a prediction and it doesn't come true, well, there's always some scapegoating going on. And there's always some poor sinner's fault for angering the fire god. And that's the reason why the priest was wrong. Now, some counterpoints, some positives, some saving graces for ideologies and doctrines, they're really useful in the absence of empirical knowledge. Doctrine and ideology might serve as some essential tools for transmitting practical survival strategies, just like we've seen with the volcano. The taboo against living near the volcano, it's a simple heuristic, a simple rule that reliably protects the lives of the tribe, even if the underlying mechanism is not understood at all. Another benefit would be the cultural encoding of empirical observations, because anthropologists, this is really interesting, anthropologists often observe that many mythological, quote-unquote, doctrines encode real empirical associations. They're based on actual things they observed about reality. For example, the fact that you can't eat certain types of meat in some cultures. Like, this is derived from observations, from empirical observations that were made a long, long time ago about food safety. They didn't have a germ theory. They didn't know about food going bad and allergies and so on and so forth. Just don't eat that. Because why? Because God said so. Another saving grace is the strength in transmission. Because an abstract or mythological framing, it often resonates a lot deeper than some pure empirical, boring explanations. Like, if you tell somebody, don't go there because fire god, they're a lot more likely to believe you than if you tell them, don't go there because plate tectonics. Like, you would have to explain to them what plate tectonics is, they would have to be interested in learning that. Usually, ideologies work a lot better because they are not just narratives, they're simple narratives. That means they require a lot less of a mental budget to understand. So they work a lot better because, again, we tend to take the easiest way out. Another thing is that they're really useful in holding together societies. Because if you have a doctrine of don't steal, right? Like, why shouldn't I take this thing that I can take? Because it's not yours. Okay, so what? I can still take it. Like, if you do that in a society, it all goes pretty... it's not going to work. So you need some kind of reason for people to not steal and respect property rights. And if you say that it's because God, fire or otherwise, said so, then, hey, that's a good enough reason. You don't want to go to hell. You don't want to be, you know, suffer eternal pain and torture and damnation. So just don't do that so we can have a society. Like, you can condemn pickaxes all you want. Like, they built the railroads. You can condemn rubbing two sticks together to make fire all you want. But that's the reason why we have civilization. It's primitive, but it works. So the key here is not blaming the primitive tools of ideologies and doctrines and the imaginary relationships that they're based on. No. The answer is build better tools. Learn how to use them. Teach others how to use them. So while doctrine and ideology may originate from this imaginary relationship between cause and effect, the fact that they persist and the fact that they're useful lies in their ability to convey some actionable knowledge and to promote, like we've seen, social cohesion. There are some that say that we need to get better ideologies. Like, this is the final point I'll leave you with. This is so dumb. And it's infuriating to me. Like, people keep trying to come up with a better ideology. This is akin, like, Henry Ford, I think, said this, the inventor of the automobile. Before him, people wouldn't have wanted cars because they didn't know what a car was. They just wanted faster horses. This is exactly what we're doing now with ideologies. Instead of looking for the next big leap forward, such as from horse-drawn carriage to automobile, we're looking for the better ideology, which is just a faster horse. And on that note, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. Have a great day.